And it's Ari Rosenbaum with a special Christmas episode of That 401k Podcast. Always reminds me of that very special episode of Different Strokes when Arnold and Kimberly get abducted. And I think a couple years later, Sam got abducted. And, of course, the situation with Arnold and Dudley with the pedophile bike store owner played by Gordon Jump. But that's a crazy segue. But anyway, our topic for this week is really annoying 401k practices that I see. It may be provision of law. It may be certain practices that just annoy really the crap out of me. So this is where I can play my inner Larry David with Curb Your Enthusiasm. Of course, it's one of the shows that I love. And one of the reasons I love it is because I can see a lot of me in Larry. Well, maybe not a lot of me, but part of me in Larry of just getting annoyed about certain things. And you know, the difference between Larry and I is that Larry verbalizes a lot of, you know, things that I certainly wouldn't like, you know, talk about. And Larry is willing to die on certain hills that I'm not willing to die on. So before that goes on, let's talk about the upcoming event. And before we think about live events, and I think June 11th, 2021 is where we will return live to Minneapolis for that very first, that 401k conference live in any year. That's the way I think it'll look like after I got a couple of shots. But before that, we have that 401k National Virtual Conference on January 21 and 22 of 2021. Go to that 401kside.com for further information on how you can be a part of it, either as a participant, viewer for starting at $33.33, or to be a plan provider, sponsor, and speak at the event and whatnot, and go to that 401kside.com for further information. It's going to be a fun event. 2 days, Walt Frazier, Doc Gooden, Retireholics, all that kind of good stuff. 2 days of content, a lot of great presenters, and we hope that you're going to be a part of it. So going back to Larry David, you know, in some ways I think it may be heresy, but I do sometimes enjoy Curb Your Enthusiasm more than I enjoy Seinfeld. And of course, like I said, it's that kind of nitpicking and fights that Larry has that always ends up blowing up in his face. But talking about, you know, annoying 401k practices, first thing off the top, I hate the current definition of highly compensated employee. Well, not just the current definition, the idea that somebody in New York making $130,000 is highly compensated. You know, back when I was a law firm associate, I was kind of making that money. I still didn't find myself to be highly compensated. I look at my tax bill, I look at my mortgage payment. So many other things. I just don't see somebody making $130,000 really highly compensated. It's just my two cents. Yeah, the amounts increase inflation, but, you know, being in a high tax state, a high cost state, you know, I just don't feel that that is a true test of whether someone's highly compensated. And, you know, the idea of highly compensated employees, you want to make sure there's no discrimination in terms of lower paid employees. But the fact is, just because, you know, if I'm making $130,000 and somehow I could put away, you know, $19,000 and change, I don't think I should be hampered as a result of the fact that the lower paid employees can't afford to put that kind of percentage away. And that goes back to my next problem, which is the ADP test. Again, that goes hand in hand with HC definition, in my opinion. And as for, you know, as you guys know, the ADP test compares the average salary deferrals of HCEs to that of non-HCEs. And, you know, we're always looking to the percentage comp that's deferred to a 401k plan. And to pass the ADP test, the HC deferral rates need to fall below certain thresholds. If the ADP rate for NHCs is 0 to 2, the ADP for HCs must not be more than 2 times the NHC rate. If the ADP rate for NHCs is 2 to 8%, the ADP rate for HCs can't exceed the NHC rate by 2%. And if the ADP rate for NHCs is greater than 8%, the ADP rate for HCs must not be more than 1.25%. 1.25 times. And the problem, again, is, like I said with my definition of HCE, lower-paid people can't afford to defer as much as higher-paid people. I get that. But that's not discrimination. That's a fact of life. You know, if I was making $150,000, again, as a law firm associate, and the secretary was making $70,000, $75,000, it stands to reason that I will be able to defer more than she will or he will. I understand that, you know, my going against the ADP test would, you know, foil the need for safe harbor contributions, but, you know, I'm all about fairness. And, one of the things I love about 403B plans is the idea of the universal availability requirements that, all employees employed by an organization that sponsors the 403B plan will automatically be eligible to be a part of the salary deferral component of the plan. And as a result of the universal availability requirement, there's no ADP test. I love that portion. I love that part of the 403B plan. It's probably the only thing I like about 403B plans compared to 401k plans, but it's a huge thing to like. And, you know, my problem is, okay, you know, I don't want to gut the need for safe harbor contributions, but I want to be, you know, so if I'm not going to gut the ADP test and eliminate it and say, you know, I'll trade the ADP test for a universal availability requirement for the deferral component of a 401k plan, I want, you know, a limit on the discrimination testing that makes sense, you know, instead of 2 percentage points, maybe 2 times. So if the lower rate people, you know, the lower paid get, you know, defer 5, then the HCs should be limited to 10. I want something that is realizing the reality that higher paid people have the ability to defer more than lower paid people. That's just my feeling on the matter. You're never going to really change my mind because I just don't feel that the fact that highly compensated employees can defer at a higher clip than HCs is a form of discrimination. To me, a form of discrimination is when, you know, my old law firm allowed only law firm partners to have brokerage accounts. I didn't make a stink about it at the time because I didn't want to get clipped, which didn't help me anyway, but I also didn't want a self-directed brokerage account either. Who the heck needs that? That's my 2 cents. But, you know, I just think that the current ADP test model and the current HC model definition really hurts the what I think is a retirement crisis in the United States. You know, 401k plans have over the last 40 years have become the de facto retirement plan for worksite employees that don't work for government or work for a large corporation that still has a defined benefit plan or a union or whatnot. So for most of us in private employment, not public employment, 401k plan serves as our only portion of the plan. It is the only retirement plan that we can actually save, you know, worksite solution. And I think that the ADP test and the HC definition hurts a lot of, you know, again, by their definition, a highly compensated employee for saving enough for retirement. That's just my 2 cents. And so therefore, you know, I think there's got to be changes to the ADP test. And changes the HC definition to make it more sound in terms of, you know, really preventing actual discrimination. Next on my hit list is the length and non-uniformity of fee disclosure forms. Fee disclosure is, to me, one of the greatest changes in the retirement plan business. I worked for TPAs many years. I was always bothered by the hide-the-ball kind of idea of TPA pricing. And, it was a game changer in terms of lowering plan expenses. And I like the idea of fee disclosures. The problem that I always had is that the Department of Labor didn't require, a uniformity in the way that the forms should look. I love model disclosures information. You go to anywhere in the United States and you pick up a food product, they have a uniformity in terms of the food label. You know, how many calories there are, how much carbohydrates, how much sugar, what kind of vitamins are in there, and the list of ingredients, and of course the first ingredient, and the list of ingredients, the first named ones are the ones that have a higher percentage of the product. They are the biggest focal points. And I always like when, trying to close on a mortgage, you get a federal truth in lending form. I like uniformity. Always been a big fan of uniformity. The problem with the retirement plan business, when it came to fee disclosure, there never was uniformity. And you can have a plan going from one TPA to the other, and the disclosure forms look nothing alike. And there's still confusion as to what fees really are. And I felt that, there are some TPAs out there where, I think I'd have to send it to the lab to try to get these disclosure forms deciphered in a language that I could understand. I just like something that, is uniform amongst all plan providers, one for advisors, one for TPAs, some type of semblance of uniformity. Nothing can be exact, but something where we can all understand what is being charged, and the plan sponsor who, of course, most plan sponsors just chuck out these forms, but if they ever looked at these forms, that they would understand the connection between one form from one provider and a form from the other provider. To me, it offers simplicity and transparency in a business that I think that we all should try to strive for. So it's just my two cents, just my experience. Next on my hit list is something very close to my heart right now because it's something that I'm going through right now. It's called TPA termination fees. I'm a huge New York Mets fan. I think people realize that. And outside of Gil Hodges, the best Mets manager of all time was Davey Johnson. Davey managed a team to the 86 World Series, the 88 NLCS, and I'm still kind of ticked off. Davey gave the ball in Game 7 to Ron Darling instead of my buddy Doc Gooden. About a year later, after the 88 NLCS debacle, Davey was doing a radio show for WFAN, as he always did, and a fan called in and said, Davey, is it true that you're hired to be fired? And, this is over 30 years later, and I always remember that question because I remember that line because it's true. You are hired to be fired. You will never be at a place forever. Eventually, all things come to an end, and relationships are going to end one way or the other. Sometimes it could be a happy end, and most often, unfortunately, it's not a happy ending. And there are points where, working with a third-party administration firm, you like them a lot. I'm a fiduciary on a plan. There's one TPA I've used from the beginning. And it's coming to an end. And the problem with that ending is, when you're a fiduciary of $100 million 401k plan and the plan provider is kind of silent on termination fees. You know, the problem with a termination fee is for most TPAs, and this TPA in particular, is that the plan contract was very silent on the amount of termination fees. And that's consistent with what happened in the old days when I worked for a TPA. You know, to me, a termination fee should be specified somewhat in the plan agreement, in the agreement with the TPA. When you're getting, and again, like I said, when you're a fiduciary of a $100 million 401k plan and you get a deconversion cost of $100,000, that's a problem. You know, I look at my service, you know, if I have clients that pay me a monthly retainer, and over the years, certain clients stopped paying me that monthly retainer because they couldn't afford it anymore. I didn't charge them extra as some kind of deconversion fee. And it's interesting that, you know, TPAs still feel that they're entitled to it. And I understand that that's work. But I think that should be built into the original fee. I don't know of any other service where you terminate somebody and all of a sudden they slap you with another fee. You know, I change doctors. I don't get a fee. Maybe sometimes they'll try to charge you for your medical records. But, you know, with this TPA in question, you know, I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I would be breaching my fiduciary duty if I paid that 1% termination cost, and that 1% termination cost is greater than their annual fee that they were collecting as the TPA. So when signing a TPA contract, I think it's important for the plan sponsor to identify, you know, the termination requirements and any cost, you know, requirements. And again, my contract was silent, you know, because, you know, I think it's important to understand what's going on, because like that caller called in with Davey Johnson, you are hired to be fired. Speaking of fees that I don't like TPAs charging, and again, I'm pro-TPA, so, you know, my two cents. I have a good friend who's a salesman for a TPA based not far from my house. Many years ago, gave me a proposal where his company would charge an asset-based fee in addition to a $2,500 minimum. So I asked him point blank, what's the cost difference for you to administer a 100-person $10 million 401k plan and a 100-person $100 million plan? And he had no answer because, quite honestly, outside of custodial fees, the answer is no. A TPA work, in my opinion, is always a per-head business. More participants counts that they have to create and watch, the more work there is. So whether participants have a $10,000 average or $100,000 average in their account balance, the work of the TPA is one and the same. So, you know, my opinion, TPA fees should be based on a minimum and a participant head charge. You know, and to me, taking a piece of the action through an asset-based fee, it's something I will always disagree with. And I'm sure there'll be TPAs who listen to this and disagree with me. Last but not least on my list, payroll provider TPAs. And, you know, I write an annual article, comes out usually in the summer, about the problems of hiring the ADP and Paychexes of the world to be your TPA. And I first want to, you know, specify that my opinions are shaped by my experiences. So I have been a risk attorney for 22 years. I feel that these payroll providers, the top two in the country, are not very good at 401k plan administration. And I haven't seen it improve. You know, my opinions can change over time, but my opinions on payroll provider TPAs has not changed because I haven't seen any improvement whatsoever. Years ago, I had a very strong bias against producing TPAs, those TPAs with an ancillary investment advisory firm. And the reason I had that bias was because of fee disclosure rules. And, these TPAs pushing plans to revenue sharing paying funds and not being totally transparent in the amount of the fees. And so therefore I have that bias. But thanks to fee disclosure, that bias is mainly gone. I still question whether you should hire a provider that wears multiple hats. Just my two cents. But, you know, my well-known and long-standing opinions about payroll provider TPAs hasn't really changed. It really hasn't mellowed. I don't find them up to the task of properly administering plans consistently and competently. They will always see TPA work as an ancillary business, and they administer plans as if it's an ancillary business. And I don't think that you can, you know, treat it like a hobby. Plan administration is not a hobby or something to do to make the time go and collect more bills. You know, I burn my bridges with these payroll provider TPAs because of my criticism. And the reason, you know, on the flip side, that's not really a bad thing, because a good part of my business is fixing a lot of 401k plans that have been mishandled by these payroll provider TPAs. And, you know, I feel like they fail to they run TPA, their TPA business like they run their payroll provider business, which is giving little guidance to the plan sponsor and assuming a plan sponsor can handle it like they can handle payroll. And plan sponsors, especially for small, medium-sized businesses that they service, those plan sponsors need a lot of handholding. And these payroll provider TPAs are not the type of TPAs that can give that kind of help. And that's my experience. And as it's been going on for the last 20 some odd years, that's been my opinion. If you work for a payroll provider TPA, you're obviously going to have a different opinion than I do. That's shaped on your experience. And my opinion isn't better than yours. And your opinion is certainly better than mine. Certainly not better than mine. So those are my lists and pet peeves. And I hope you enjoy this edition of That 401k Podcast. Please go to that401ksite.com for further information over concerning the That 401k National Virtual Conference on January 21 and 22 of 2021. Go to that401ksite.com for further information on how you could be a part of it. Thanks. Take care. Bye.